Hello. Welcome to the show called The Environment. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sunsounds of Arizona. The last time we were together, I was reading an article out of the World Wildlife Magazine, the Spring 2026 edition. The article was entitled Right of Way. The subtitle was A Storied River in New Mexico Faces Unrelenting Pressure, a problem that a dedicated alliance of partners is working to resolve. This article was written by Laura Paskus. I didn't get a chance to finish the article, so I'm going to spend a few minutes today reading a couple of paragraphs beginning the article, so we're kind of brought back up to speed, and then we'll switch over to the last page or two of the article. Stretching 1,900 miles from the San Juan Mountains in southern Colorado to the Gulf Coast, the Rio Grande supplies drinking water to 15 million people in the United States and Mexico, and it irrigates more than 3,000 square miles of farmland. That's an area larger than Delaware. The Rio Grande Compact of 1938 divvies up that water among Colorado, New Mexico, and Texas. Every drop of the river's waters is allocated to someone. But the river itself has no rights to any of those waters. So all of these factors make it a challenge to unite individual landowners and desperate communities across a small portion of the watershed. Yet even as the region becomes warmer and more arid, a shared effort that includes the local municipalities and the pueblos, as well as World Wildlife Federation and other nonprofit partners like Defenders of Wildlife and Audubon Southwest, they're developing solutions for people, wildlife, and the river itself. On a midwinter morning in northern New Mexico, Emilio Borrego and Rue Stempien walk the hilly stretch of land where Borrego grew up. On just over 4 acres, above the mountain village of Cordova, the young couple grow corn and beans, squash, and a chili variety that Borrego's father had cultivated for decades. They also tend dozens of fruit and nut trees, including traditional favorites and drought-tolerant species that they are testing out as the snowpack declines. Borrego spent his childhood playing and working here, and he has witnessed the world and the watershed change. And now he says he wants to be part of another change for good. At the edge of their property, he points to the Rio Quemado, a tributary of the Rio Grande. Just upstream, a network of beaver dams and dens stretches into the watershed's forested mountains. The toothy rodents' activities bolster the biodiversity of rivers and wetlands and help streams flow year-round. Sediment builds up around the nature-made structures and then disperses when floodwaters breach the barrier. It is a process that has shaped countless streams and valleys like this one and has enticed farmers to the nutrient-rich land. But over time, people also came to resent the eco-engineers for making the stream beds shift. So today, thanks in part to a grant from WWF, Borrego works with Defenders of Wildlife to build support for beavers in this part of the watershed where they can coexist with farms and homes. Borrego said, quote, "I'm kind of breaking a myth," unquote. He noted how some people fear beaver dams will flood homes and fields and roads, but that others, quote, "have cool memories of how things used to be, like the river used to run stronger, and there were more beavers in the watershed. There used to be more ojitos, little stream systems or springs that came down from the hills." Once people start remembering, he says, they imagine what the valley could look like again. In the summer of 2022, the Rio Quemado sparkled to life. while record-breaking fires burned in New Mexico forest and whole stretches of the middle Rio Grande in and around Albuquerque ran dry, fireflies returned for the first time in decades to the pastoral valley behind the Santuario de Chimiayo, a famed healing shrine visited by thousands of Catholic pilgrims each year. 2 decades ago, Santa Fe County acquired 40 acres near the church to protect it from development and to preserve the pastoral setting. Over the years, county officials garnered public input, created a management plan for the newly minted Los Potreros open space, and they tried to restore the stream and the grasslands while also supporting local agriculture. As soon as the county blocked cattle's access to the stream, beavers moved in. But, according to Adeline Murphy, who leads the planning for open space and trails for Santa Fe County, Adeline said, quote, "They weren't exactly welcomed back," unquote. Within just a few years of the restoration project's kickoff, beaver dams at Los Potreros slowed the Rio Quemado, allowing the river to deposit sediment into the incised stream channel and nurture a wide, braided meadow. Some streamside neighbors worried, and they still worry, about flooding, which is understandable. Adeline said, quote, "It can be hard to take neat agricultural land and turn it back into a healthy, messy riparian system," unquote. But now, migrating birds take advantage of the more reliable water source, and the biodiversity has increased dramatically. And while much of New Mexico burned and dried in 2022, this stretch of the stream kept running, lighting up with the rare fireflies and raising the water table high enough for local farmers to harvest an extra cutting of hay. Murphy said, quote, "These little pockets of wetlands benefit agricultural production and allow for continued water supply in times of drought by storing water in the land. Any opportunity anyone can take in the watershed to steward little bits of wetland is really important." Since 2011, when a wildfire devastated another Rio Grande tributary, the Santa Clara Creek, the Pueblo of Santa Clara has invested heavily in the watershed's health. They've also spent decades restoring the riverside forest along the Rio Grande, where it runs through tribal lands. And today, they are trying to protect 2 miles of the Rio Santa Cruz, which is about 10 miles downstream of the Santuario. Daniel Denapa, the Pueblo's forestry director, says that among many other habitat restoration and management efforts, the Pueblo protects beavers because they help the entire watershed. Their ponds and dams slow springtime floods. They also trap sediment and clean the water and hold water higher in the watershed, and they create habitat for other wildlife and plants. Santa Clara Governor James Naranjo said, quote, "We use beavers for cultural dances, and we wear the pelts for different ceremonies. They're an important part of our culture and heritage," unquote. But beaver dams can exacerbate conflicts over lands and waters, especially in places where the Pueblo only has authority over a small stretch of the river. Naranjo said, quote, "We're trying to put some kind of remedies in there to keep everybody happy. But more than anything, we want to keep the beavers happy, keep them safe, and keep the wholeness of the river," unquote. So as the Pueblo works on this short stretch of the Santa Cruz, they face myriad challenges, including a shrinking water supply due to warming and conflicts with other water users, and encampments that pollute the water supply. But Denapa persists by incorporating conservation and forestry science, as well as the knowledge of elders, and putting young people to work on everything from watershed restoration to creating butterfly habitat. He knows that even small projects have big impacts, including downstream. He is also especially mindful of future generations. He says, quote, "When people are in beautiful places, they are able to have beautiful thoughts, unquote. The farther south the Rio Grande's waters travel, the more challenges they face. Despite demand from cities like Santa Fe and Albuquerque, along with agricultural, uses more than 50% of the river's waters. And in the mid-1990s, it started to become clear how strained the middle Rio Grande had become. That's when the river begins to dry, sometimes for stretches of up to 70 miles. Hydrologist Paul Tashjian, who worked for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for almost three decades before becoming director of freshwater conservation at Audubon, New Mexico, 7 years ago, Paul said, quote, "Now it's like every year there's some drying, and the snowmelt coming off the mountains has really decreased." Working with federal, state, and local partners, Audubon, New Mexico leases water when it's available in upstream reservoirs to create a spring pulse for the federally endangered silvery minnow, or to strategically keep the river channel wetter during hot, dry times. Now, Audubon is among the partners working with WWF to restore environmental flows in the river while also boosting water security for farmers. First, the partners quantified how much water the Rio Grande needs in six different stretches by considering questions like, during the heat of summer, how much water will keep a stretch from drying? How much water do fish need for springtime spawning? What will keep the ecosystem healthy? And then, Tashjian said, they evaluated how the dams and the diversions and the management protocols worked. In 2022, WWF released a report card for the upper Rio Grande River Basin from the headwaters in Colorado through Texas, showing that despite climate change and overconsumption, the Rio Grande still nurtures critical ecosystems and wildlife. The report card assessed the river's overall condition as moderate, noting that while the river reliably supplies water for cities, the watershed's score worsens from north to south as biodiversity decreases and the river channel is increasingly prone to low flows and drying. While data and details are vital to protecting the river long term, it's not enough, says Enrique Prunes, WWF's Rio Grande manager and freshwater lead specialist. As a longtime expert on the larger river basin, Prunes has worked on projects spanning Colorado, New Mexico, Texas, and northern Mexico. He's also given the question of the river's survival across the basin a lot of thought. He said, quote, "We believe that a healthy, flowing river is the clearest sign of a thriving ecosystem, one that supports both nature and people. And that's why WWF is trying to be a bridge for conversations among the many people who rely on the Rio Grande, to help ensure that science and policy guide all our decisions and that all voices are heard." In central New Mexico, the Middle Rio Grande Conservancy District delivers water to farmers within a 150-mile stretch of the watershed. The quasi-governmental agency's history is complicated. To attract Anglo settlers and farmers, the district condemned land and built the valley's irrigation infrastructure to create 60,000 acres of farmland from salt marshes and swamplands. When it started taxing farmers, many of those who had lived in the valley for generations, they ended up in arrears and they lost their lands. But a new perspective has taken hold in recent decades. Quote, "Today, the district works to meet three key needs: supply water to irrigators, comply with the Rio Grande Compact's directive that New Mexico deliver water to Texas, and care for the health of the river's natural resources," unquote. That's from Casey Ish, Director of Lands and Conservation at the agency. Casey went on and said, quote, "There's a lot that we do here to try and balance a system that is, for all intents and purposes, no longer able to balance itself, unquote. As Ish speaks, a wedge of sandhill cranes flies overhead, calling to one another with their guttural croaks. Tens of thousands of these tall, lean birds winter in the middle Rio Grande Valley, foraging in chili and cornfields, and roosting overnight in the river channel or within sculpted ponds in a string of state and federally run wildlife refuges south of Albuquerque. Downstream, for example, at the Bernardo Wildlife Area, manager Michael Chavez readies all year for the cranes. Relying on water deliveries from the district, he cultivates corn for the birds in the spring and summer and moves fresh water through the wildlife ponds and wetlands in the fall and winter. Chavez, who grew up on the refuge because his father was a manager there beginning back in 1956, Chavez said, quote, "We're not getting the water we used to, so we have to do things more efficiently. We laser leveled our fields and lined the ditches with concrete, so there's no water loss through the dirt. It's just a different world now," unquote. Migrating sandhill cranes, like other river-dependent wildlife, from the silvery minnows and beavers to otters and elk and multiple trout species, and birds like the western yellow-billed cuckoo, they don't distinguish between the river's natural ecosystem and irrigated farmland. They just see suitable habitat. Ish said, quote, "What we've effectively been able to maintain through carefully managed water releases is a lot of the same processes that the river would have performed previously, which is spreading water across the valley," unquote. Rather than fomenting division between farmers and the federal government, or people advocating for the river and its ecosystems, the district now considers itself a partner in protecting the Rio Grande. Ish said, quote, "We can't continue to provide services to farmers unless we are balancing the system. It's also just the right thing to do. We pull from the river provides for us, and we need to do our part to provide for the river in return," unquote. So, while no one imagines the Rio Grande will flood and flow as it did prior to colonization and the legal compacts, or that the river will run undammed and undiverted from the headwaters to the delta, a hopeful community of river champions persist, because even in a hotter, drier world, it is still possible to heal the Rio Grande, one stretch, one small valley, or one gathering of partners at a time. And that was the article entitled Right of Way by Laura Paskus. And now in the time we have left, I'm going to read little short articles. There are a section of the paper of the magazine called In Brief. This first one is, Survey Says Nature Matters to Americans. Americans value natural resources and understand how important a healthy environment is to food and water security and wildlife protection and climate resilience. That is according to findings from the WWF's Connected by Nature report. Additionally, 84% of Americans are concerned about threats to nature, and 73% feel it is a civic duty to take care of nature. The survey results, based on a WWF GlobeScan survey of 2,000 adults, will provide organizations and decision makers the data needed to inspire collective action and build public will and move conservation efforts forward. It's a reminder that only by working together can we ensure that nature remains a true national treasure for future generations. And then on the near the bottom of the article, there are these little blurbs. 8 out of 10 Americans surveyed say they like or love time in nature. 73% of Americans believe nature is central to the nation's identity. And 3 out of 4 Americans say protecting nature is critical for a steady food and water supply. And that was the short article. Survey says nature matters. Our next little article is called Give an Hour for Earth. What do planting native seeds and signing petitions have in common. They are just a few of the many ways people contributed to the WWF's record-breaking Give an Hour for Earth campaign last year. The national initiative invites nature lovers to spend at least 60 minutes each April helping the planet. In the United States alone, more than 116,000 individuals participated. That's a 26% increase in participation from 2024, with around 128,000 hours of impact. The activities ran the gamut. Some included advocacy work like writing to representatives. Others were fundraising or cooking or gardening. Take time to protect our planet this April by giving an hour for Earth. And you can learn more about how to participate at their website, wwf.is/EarthHour26. And that's Give an Hour for Earth. Next up, we have three things to know about offer versus serve. School meal programs feed millions of American students, but around 530,000 tons of this food gets tossed each year. The offer versus serve concept, which the WWF supports, could help trim some of this waste. This strategy lets students select the meal components they would like to eat, teaching them to only take what they need. Serving fruits and vegetables is required, but participants can turn down commonly discarded items like milk, because schools waste up to 45 million gallons of milk each year. All U.S. high schools now offer food rather than serve it, but the WWF is pushing to better establish the idea with younger children. Elementary students waste nearly 40% more food than high schoolers. And that was three things to know about offer versus serve. And now here's an update entitled Home Base, Protecting U.S. Wildlife and Their Habitats. Green sea turtle hatchlings, small enough to fit in the palm of your hand, poke through their eggshells under the sand, and then they scramble across the beach to the surf. While they spend most of their lives offshore, the females return to the same beaches, generation after generation, to lay eggs. In the 1960s, there were extremely low numbers of green sea turtle nests in Florida. Since then, the numbers have gone back up, thanks in large part to the Endangered Species Act, our nation's most effective law for protecting at-risk animals and plants, as well as the establishment of the Archie Carr National Wildlife Refuge. In 2023, 61,000 nests were counted in Florida's core nesting beaches. But there are newly proposed rules, including one to remove destruction of habitat from the ESA's definition of harm to a species. It would limit the government's ability to prevent habitat loss. And since the well-being of green sea turtles and northern spotted owls and black-footed ferrets and over 1,600 other ESA-listed species in the United States is tied to their habitats, we need to ensure strong protections are maintained. To help, contact your members of Congress and ask them to oppose attempts to weaken the ESA and the protections it provides. Be a part of the effort to safeguard endangered species right here in the United States. And that was an update entitled Home Base, Protecting U.S. Wildlife and Their Habitats. Community First Conservation in Alaska. The Arctic is warming nearly four times faster than the rest of the planet. Communities like those in Alaska often bear the brunt of these changes. WWF has been helping local people by supporting several Alaska Native-led initiatives through both its Arctic Community Wildlife Grants and robust youth programming that supports climate change adaptation, coastal ecology, local livelihoods, and Arctic wildlife. In the Bering Strait, with sea ice forming later and melting earlier than it once did, polar bears are spending more time near communities around the Bering Strait, raising the risk of human-wildlife conflict. In response, WWF works with the indigenous-led Alaska Nanute Company Management Council to develop and fund deterrence plans that blend local knowledge with specific regional concerns, building on existing projects in Alaska's North Slope and enabling people to feel more comfortable living alongside polar bears. And the Bering Strait hosts over a million marine mammals, including whales, seals, and walruses. But as diminishing sea ice opens up new shipping channels, threats like ship strikes, oil spills, and noise pollution can harm animals and the people who rely on healthy marine resources. Now, the WWF and the Arctic Watch Program are broadcasting alerts to vessels with specifics about local wildlife habitats and speed measures, all in order to make sea traffic safer for all. And those were some local community-first conservation efforts in Alaska. We're almost out of time. I'm going to have to say goodbye. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I have been reading from the World Wildlife Magazine, the Spring 2026 edition. You have been listening to the show called The Environment. I hope you have a great week ahead, and I hope you keep on listening. Bye for now.